Welcome to the Women on the Rise podcast. This is where we talk all things entrepreneurship aimed at female entrepreneurs. Whether you are just starting out or you have a 7 or an 8 figure business, we bring you the greatest tools, techniques, and ideas for inspiration for your business. I also interview some of the world's leading entrepreneurs from all over the world to hear about their businesses and what they've done to grow and scale their businesses. I welcome you to join us in our journey for Women on the Rise. Welcome to the Women on the Rise podcast. And today I am joined in New Zealand with Kath Vincent, who is a founder of a number of different businesses, so many that I'm not even going to tell you. I will let Kath tell you all about her entrepreneurial journey here in New Zealand. Welcome to the podcast, Kath.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
I'm so delighted to have you because you spoke at our last Female Fusion event that we had in Auckland. I wasn't here. I didn't get to see that, but I heard from everybody. It was fantastic.
Thank you. It was a really gorgeous event. You know, heaps of women sharing and collaborating. It was just really fun to be part of.
That's what I love about Female Fusion as well, right? It's so cool that we connect women all over the world to build their businesses. And it's just really nice women as well, which I like, because you hear sometimes people go, oh, you know, women aren't nice to each other. They're not supportive. And I'm like, if you get the right women in a room, that they will support you, they will uplift you, they will recommend you to a room of strangers.
Yeah, you want to magnetize the people who are interested in personal growth. And alongside that, they're trying to help each other grow as well.
Yeah. So, as I said in our intro, you are a woman of many businesses and many talents.
Lots of hats.
Maybe tell our listeners a little bit about you and about some of the businesses that you have here.
Yeah. So I started out as a business consultant after I chop and change jobs in my 20s. I realized that what I was doing was I was going around fixing things. And then when they were fixed, it was a bit boring. So I'd find somewhere else to fix. So I was a training really as a business consultant. And then finally, I just went into business consultancy and I now coach SMEs. So I really focus on the little guy. And what I'm obsessed with is helping small businesses to stop leaking profit, because all businesses leak profit, even really successful ones. And the little guy in pushing hard and the momentum at which we all live is leaking profit that they seem to not have time to fix.
Okay, so I love that, because it's such a big issue, right? And so many businesses, and I think I see this a lot of times, and I see this with our members, and I've experienced it as well before, that when you get really busy, and I think where you see a lot of the profit leak is when you experience the growth.
Yeah.
And you're growing so fast that you maybe outgrow the systems and the processes that you have.
Exactly.
The ones that you have are not fit for purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done this where it's just like, you don't even check. You're like, yep, we'll do this. We'll pay for this. We'll do that. And you don't have a handle on things, or you're maybe not going through the process of hiring the right people or vetting the service or the product that you need, or forgetting to cancel the old stuff that you no longer need in your business.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if you think about those processes and systems, if you liken it to something simple like making up a cup of tea, right? You're at home, you're making a cup of tea. If every time you had to make a cup of tea, you had to walk down the hallway and out and round the corner to go and get the tea bags, you'd go, this doesn't really work. But if that were a business situation, you go, ah, it's fine. We've just got to make this damn cup of tea, you know?
Right.
And so we don't stop and go, you know what? If I adjusted this process, I could, you know, let's say you do it 10 times a day, I could save 3 minutes a time. There's 30 minutes in a day. You know, you average that out over the year and you put a dollar sign to it.
Yeah,
that is a lot of profit.
So what would you say are typical areas where businesses are leaking profit then?
Well, very often we think of profit as being money, obviously. Sales is a game scored with money. But really, in terms of time and energy, those are also areas in which we leak profit. But it goes unseen. So if someone came into your office and sat down and said, hey, why don't you give me $100? You'd be like, I don't think I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, without a good reason, right?
Right.
But if they said, hey, you know, give me an hour of your time, why don't we sit down and have a coffee meeting? And we go along with things like that without really saying, is this a good use of everyone's time? Not just my time, but actually everyone's time. So there's a lot of kind of vagueness in how those things occur. And if you really do a time audit, you'll discover you're leaking profit everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
If you do anything that you don't want to do, you're leaking profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the time audit is so important, and especially as well as you grow, right? Because you go from delivering all of the things in the business to maybe you shouldn't be doing all of the things in the business. And I even... I have a bit of a habit of doing this that, you know, even still, and I've been an entrepreneur for close to 3 decades, and our business is on a platform called Kajabi, and I know Kajabi really well, and I'm really fast on Kajabi. It's kind of one of those things where I was like, I'm going to understand my business inside and out, and as I was building the business, although I had other people doing things, I was like, explain this to me. I want to know how to do it. And I find I spend a lot of time in Kajabi playing around with things and fixing things. And I have another friend, Dr. Lucy, who's in Australia, and she also has her business on Kajabi, and she does the same thing. And we joke and we're like, we're the most expensive Kajabi people in the world. And it is like, and it's one of those things that you look at it and it's like, why did I just build that sales page?
Yeah.
And, you know, and Lucy will do the same thing, like multiple 7-figure business. And we're kind of like, why are we doing it?
Because you're good at it.
Because you're good at it.
Yeah.
And because you can do it in an hour as opposed to somebody who can do it in 10.
Yeah.
And also it is sometimes, and this is where it's hard sometimes when you're looking at the time. And I'll say this to members too, like, what is the stuff that you really love doing? Yeah. Because sometimes, like, we have a member who owns a music school and she still teaches a lot. And I said to her, you know, like, is that the best use of your time? And she's like, no, but I love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it. I want to have my hands in it. I want to do it. And that's our right as business owners, that you get to kind of make that up.
Yeah.
But it's also looking at, well, there are other things that I should be doing, maybe not.
Oh, it's that should word, though. You really have to watch for that.
Yes.
And so with any task, you know, one question is this the best use of my time?
Yeah.
That's a valid question. But also, do I love it? Now, I think what you're touching on there is sometimes we have a procrastination method of choice. Mm. And it is that we're drawn to do something that we're good at because we feel like we're achieving, even if that's not really the thing that we should do. And very often the next best action is something that you might not really want to do. And it probably will take 5 minutes or less.
Yeah.
But instead, we spend 2 hours on something and feel amazing. You know, look at what I created, you know.
I built this Kajabi. Aren't I fabulous?
Yeah. So, you know, you just really need to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Is this, you know, a great bit of my life that I'm really enjoying? Or really, is it a way of procrastinating on something more important? And it's so interesting that the way that people procrastinate depends very much on their makeup.
Yes.
So, you know, you find that, you know, engineers have businesses that are all very ordered because instead of doing sales or something that will grow the business, they're like, oh, I might just file these things.
Operations are on fire, yeah.
Exactly. And the same, you know, the accountant runs a business that, you know, oh, they're in zero all the time and they love it, but they're probably not picking up the phone or sorting a process or whatever.
So, yeah, it's funny how... we all have different strengths when it's running our businesses, but it's recognizing what we're good at, what our strengths are, and then finding people you can outsource it to or getting other people on the team to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's quite a challenge for a lot of people as they start to scale, but it's really necessary as well.
It is. And you're going to have to accept that not everyone is going to do everything exactly the way that you do it. It might not be as good. It might be. It might not be. And also it may cause some differences. You're like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know you could do that.
Well, and I think we need to be open-minded to other ways of doing things. Yeah. Like, this is why you hire people, right? Like, you should be hiring people who are better than you.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, there are other ways of doing things. I've also, one of the things I struggled with in the beginning with my business, though, was the, it's not as good as I would do it. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot of times with newer business owners.
Yeah.
And then when you've had your business for a while now, I'm just kind of like, yeah, it's 80% good. All right.
Yeah.
Done is better than perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and we have this even for things like our social media and all of our marketing. Like, I don't even look at what goes out. We discuss the strategy at the beginning of the month, and I'm like, just do it. I don't have time to approve it. But then, you know, there'll be the occasion that I'll look at things and go, maybe not how I would do it.
Yeah.
Okay, delete it. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
And I think it's much easier to do that than try to micromanage.
Yeah. People often ask for advice on, you know, how to outsource, how to get a virtual assistant, or, you know, hire someone overseas or whatever. And really it's about entrusting people with a problem, but keeping the value small. So you start off and go, right, I'm going to give them a $5 problem. If it goes terribly wrong, it's worth $5 to me.
Yeah.
Okay, they handled that. Here's a $20 problem, a $100 problem. Okay, now we're into $5,000 problems, and this is a trusted person. And that phasing helps you kind of adjust to delegating. Just give them a little bit at a time, you know.
That's really, I've never heard that analogy before. I really like that. I want to borrow that when
you
I talk to female fusion members. I will say I got it from Kat.
Cool.
Another area that you've talked about is money and zero, and saying that people need to go through their zero or whatever accounting platform it is. We're in New Zealand, so zero is the accounting platform of choice. I'm sure most businesses here.
Yeah.
But going through zero with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah.
So what sort of things do they need to be looking for?
So first of all, you have to set aside any discomfort you've got about numbers, financials, accounting, da 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 da. And like, I'm not an accountant. I'm quite proud I'm not an accountant.
Yep, me too.
I'm a regular person going, what does all this mean? And zero makes it incredibly easy. Now, very often I speak to people and I say, hey, you know, how do you handle your GST returns, or how do you do X, Y, Z? And they go, oh, my accountant does all that. And accountants are really important. We partner with accountants a lot, and we make sure that people have really good accountants. But they'll also have hundreds of clients.
Yes.
And nobody is going to know your business as well as you.
Yeah.
So you need to set aside this resistance that you might have and suck it up and go, right, I'm going to be brilliant at zero. In the same way, just like you did with Kajabi.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask every question. And instead of thinking of it as numbers or even money, think of it as your lifestyle. Now, if you were going to look at it in that way, you'd be asking a lot more questions.
I like that. You know, the one thing that's great about Xero and or any other platform is that you can pull the reports out. And I think our business is on Xero as well. We have been. I was one of the first people to use Xero, actually. Like, I remember years ago, the online accounting software, I think it was QuickBooks that we had. But QuickBooks had to be installed on one computer in the office. And so it was installed on one computer in the office, and I would have an outsourced finance guy come in once a week, and his job was to log onto that computer and do all of the invoices. Like, there was nothing in the cloud. It was actually software.
That's
someone would
so
have
cute.
To come and install it, right? And then this, because I think Xero was the first one who had the cloud-based accounting platform.
Yeah.
And we heard of that and we were like, what?
That's crazy.
It's in the cloud. It's like, it doesn't sit on a computer.
And it talks to your bank.
Bank
gives you all those transactions.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember the first time I heard of it, someone saying, I go in every morning and I reconcile my transactions. Why would you do that every day? Like, it was a total kind of what?
Know? But it does give you, so long as it's updated properly, because it does need to be updated properly, it gives you those reports that you need.
Yeah.
But a lot of people aren't doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most people, it confuses me that most people don't do a budget. I'm like, wow. You know, like, people who are really successful, and I go, you know, okay, let's look at your budget, and they don't really have one. So they look at their numbers and they say, right, we did X thousand this month. That's pretty good, eh? And I say, well, compared to what?
Yeah. What I see as well is a lot of times people are relying on their accountants to do this.
Yeah.
But oftentimes it's like a box ticking exercise that, you know, the accountants will be like, okay, so you have hired me to keep your accounts up to date. I've done that. Everything is reconciled. There you go.
Yeah.
Rather than actually working with you in your business and looking at, so what's your forecast and where is your money being spent on? And working with you as well about sort of what buckets your money should go into. So how much is being spent on marketing? How much on staff? How much on your subscriptions? And a lot of businesses don't even have a snapshot with that.
Yeah, very much so. And if you think about it, accountants are, I mean, they're essential, you know, for you to be compliant. So they're about compliance and they're about historical. So you're always looking at what just happened. Mm-hmm. And then typically if you're working with a business coach, that is about lifestyle. It's about, you know, your vision and the life that you want to create. And it's forward looking. So they're really different. They're complementary, but they're very different disciplines. And typically when people say, oh, my accountant does that, what they mean is I'm not really across the money going in and out of my account.
Yeah.
And when people do that, I mean, the accountants will say, hey, you've got a tax bill of 30 grand coming up. But they'll tell you because it's due.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They won't have strategized out how do we manage these payments. And if you think about the way money flows in and out of a business, a constant gripe for people is they never know if the money's theirs.
Yes.
There can be loads of money in the bank account, but you're going to pay that in April and May.
Yeah.
You know, you have these payment dates.
But do you know what? Like, even me, I made the mistake, and it's something I've talked to our members about as well, that I made the mistake that with one of our accountants, he was like, oh, don't worry, I'll take care of the bills. And I was traveling or something like that. And so the way that it works is that you get an OTP sent to your phone and then he can action the bank transfers. So he messaged me, he's like, okay, so I'm going to pay the bills. You know, I know you're traveling. Is that okay? And I was like, yeah, no problem. Just kind of, you know, assumptions of business. This podcast is clean, and so I'm not going to say exactly what they say about assumptions, but assumption is the mother of all F-ups. And basically, so he messaged me. He's like, hey, Jen, I'm going to pay this. I was traveling somewhere. So it's like, okay, fine. He said, send me the OTP. I sent him the OTP. All of this money came out of the bank account. And I was like, what
is that?
What? Like, I was expecting it to be a significantly smaller amount. And he brought our bank account down to almost zero. And I was like, what? Like, is there bills going on that I don't know about? And he went through, and rather than paying things on due dates, because, you know, you pay things on due dates and manage your cash flow that way because you have other money coming in, he paid everything, even things that were due out like 60 days later.
Wow.
And emptied the bank account.
Yeah.
And it took me about 8 weeks to kind of recover my cash flow from that because it really damaged that. And I was like, okay, this is like, Jen, do not do that. Like, even if you're traveling, you need to set aside that time to make sure. And I, after that happened, I was like, you don't pay the bills anymore.
And
I thought an accountant would know better.
Yeah.
They did not.
And the thing is the difference between what they know and what they really care about, the
of
way
course,
you care about it.
Because it's your business. Exactly. It's your cash flow, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we have a saying, you know, probably heard this 1,000 times in different sectors, but it's pay attention or you pay with pain.
Yeah. Yeah. But business owners, and I see more women as well.
Yeah.
We don't like numbers.
Yeah.
Don't like numbers.
They're not numbers.
No.
But they're really not.
It's our money.
Yeah. It's, you know, what activities you can do with your kids. It's where you're going on holiday. It's stuff like that. And if you see it as a game in which you're accruing so that you can do cool stuff, then it's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you've talked as well about really creating a business that gives you the lifestyle that you want.
Yeah.
So talk me through a little bit on that, because I think sometimes people feel like, oh, I'm working so hard and I'm not having the lifestyle that I want. Although I have to say, for everybody in New Zealand, and this is probably why you've moved to New Zealand, yeah. People are pretty chill here.
People are pretty chill.
People are pretty chill. And I've noticed as well that people are very serious about, like, chill time. And no, I'm out of the office. And no, I'm not talking to you. And I will get back to you in 3 or 4 days, which is very different from what I see in the Middle East, what I see in Europe, especially in the UK. Well, some European countries are like that as well, but even in the UK, that doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, when I moved here, it was a complete culture shock for me.
Yeah.
So, like, everything stops at Christmas, like, you know, really stops. So I'm back at my desk on the 6th of January phoning people, going, why is no one at their desk? And it took me a few years to get the hang of it. Everyone goes to their batch. It's sunny. You know, they go to that beach house.
So, yeah, I was going to say, we have to tell everyone what a batch is, because the first time I heard that, I was like, what?
Yeah. So they go to their beach house.
Yeah.
The whole of December, January is a bit of a write-off.
It's
and
chill.
Then people come back. And then there's a couple of public holidays in quick succession. So February is kind of like that too. So really, let's get stuck in March. Yeah.
So you've just been back to business for a few weeks then.
Pretty well. But the thing about lifestyle, it is quite chill here, but the cost of living is high in New Zealand. So, you know, you do have to work a bit to make sure that you are going to be able to go off and have time at the batch. And that's another thing that people don't really think through, is the seasonality of their business.
So if
you don't do a cash flow, you're not mapping when is the money coming, when is it going to be quiet, when do I get my time away? Because really the commodity is not money, it's peace of mind.
Yeah.
This is what lifestyle is about. You know, you can stockpile a bunch of cash, but if you're constantly worried, it's just not worth anything.
Yeah. But there is a lack of planning sometimes. And again, it's like, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I see this, so seasons are reversed between New Zealand and Europe. And one of the things that I see is with some of our members in certain countries, so for example, in the Middle East, in certain European countries, that people's cash flow suffers in the summertime.
Yeah.
Because that's typically a holiday season. And so they'll find that, like, projects that they have or products that they sell don't really happen in that summer period.
Yeah.
Because people are on holiday and they're not buying.
Yeah.
And every summer I hear, oh my gosh, cash flow is so bad, I'm not making money.
Yeah.
And every year I go, why did you not make a plan?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, this happens every summer. And so now we're in April. I don't know when this episode's going to air, but, you know, this should be like April, May.
Yeah.
If it's July and August, you should be working now to have that plan if you don't have it in place, not the 15th of July.
Exactly. And you know what? It isn't hard to make an annual plan. Like,
yes,
you could do this right now. Just write down the months, January through to December, there's 12 of them. And then think about what happens seasonally. Now, depending on your product or service, some things will mean more. Valentine's Day might mean something to you, depending on what you supply. But you can go, right, here's where typically it's downtime. Here's our biggest month.
Mm-hmm.
Here's when my tax is due. And it wouldn't be hard just to make that plan, just to start thinking about it.
That takes 30 minutes.
Okay. Take 30 minutes.
Yeah. It's not hard.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
But it's all of these things. The problem is that there isn't just that. So, you know, we listen to a podcast, go, oh, that's a great idea, I must do that. And then we, you know, get 10 emails about stuff. Oh, yeah, I should do that. And there's a lot of coming at everyone.
Of course.
All at once.
Yeah.
Like, it's said that the amount of data that comes at us these days,
it's overwhelming.
Yeah. In a year of our time is like a lifetime of data from the 50s. If you think about how people lived, like, if you wanted to get a message to someone, you wrote a letter, you stuck it in an envelope, you put a stamp on it, and you walked to the post box, and then you waited for 3 days for them to even receive it.
Yeah.
You know, like, now sometimes I email late so that it doesn't ping back, you know. I don't want them to reply today, you know, reply tomorrow.
I do normally what I do, because sometimes, like, well, I don't like email. I'm very well known that I talk about why having an email list is so important, and how, you know, email marketing for Female Fusion works really well for us. but I never read my emails.
Yes.
So it's always a joke that I'm like, I talk about how great it is, but don't email me because I'm never going to reply.
Yeah, yeah.
And, hey, and it is just the overwhelm. But I will find that if I do have to sit down for emails, that there's a little thing on your email where you can schedule it to go out the next morning.
Yeah.
So then, and I always say to people, like, don't send your email at 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Like, don't do that, because that makes you look like you're behind on your work, or you're unprofessional, or you're disorganized. Like, have it go out at 8 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning. So then, you know, you've dealt with it, but they get it in the morning.
Yeah. And, you know, I come across a lot of people who hate email, like who really hate email.
Like me. Yeah.
And it becomes this kind of, this huge kind of overwhelming thing.
Yeah.
So now, anything in your life that has friction for you, right, anything. Now, you can tell, because it makes you kind of go, right? There's a face that you make.
Kath, I have 165,000 unread emails.
Okay, we're going to have to talk, Jen, and yeah, I don't mean right now. But, so anything in your life that has friction associated, you want to process for it.
Yeah.
Right? So we talked about the tea bags. You go and, you know, the tea bags are too far away from the kettle. That's friction. Sort it out. So with emails, what you want is that every email that comes in has a category that you assign it to. Now, I'm not talking about filing. People waste a lot of time filing.
No, we've tried that.
But what you want is a pre-assigned response to it.
Oh, no, we have an autoresponder.
Oh, sorry. Let me be more clear. So I don't mean to reply to other people. I mean that when you see it, you don't go, which it, and then put it to one side.
Yeah.
So you get your email and you go, you triage it. You triage everything that comes at you, any data that comes at you, triage it, like in the emergency room. Okay. This one's bleeding to death. We better operate.
Yeah.
This one can wait. This one's not really sick. That's,
you know, I get 300 to 400 emails a day.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm just like, you know how to find me. Yeah. You can WhatsApp me. You can DM me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to respond to an email.
Oh, cool. Hey, train people.
Yeah,
that's
right. And that's because I have another friend who has a big business as well. And she's the same way. We were actually talking about this when we were on our retreat in Kenya. And she was like, same thing. I get hundreds of emails a day. And she said, so I use it as a marketing tool. She said, what I do is I will change my autoresponder all the time and talk about like different things we have going on and say, you know, if you want this, here's the person to talk about this, talk to that person. And then, oh, by the way, if you want to know about ABC, here's a link for this to book this and this.
That's great.
And she was saying that just from doing that, she never responds to emails. And even like, she's like, same with me, doesn't do it. Yeah. But she said that the autoresponder with that just like kills so many of them, because then they'll go and find the other people to talk to.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, you just need to find your way.
The process.
So that there's no thinking. There's no kind of like, oh, well, I could this. Oh, maybe that. I'll do nothing.
Yes.
Email overwhelm is an accumulation of decisions that weren't made.
Hmm.
It came
could
at,
be.
Yeah. I'm not talking about you necessarily. Yeah.
No,
busy
that's fine.
International lady that you
it's
are.
It's fine. But no, that's, you know, I used to be really good with emails because I had another business that did like corporate training. And so I dealt with a lot of corporates, but I didn't get the hundreds of emails a day.
Yeah.
And it gets to a point, because even my assistant is like,
what the heck?
She's like, for the first week, I remember when she started picking up my email, she burst into tears. She was like, I don't even know what to do with it. And I was like, so don't respond.
Oh, you
know,
Jen, like, you broke her.
I felt so bad. And she was like, I have in my like 15 years of doing assistant work, she's like, I have never seen an inbox like this. I was like, so don't reply. I don't care.
Okay.
I mean, it's slightly different, right? Like from a corporate business to having something like Female Fusion, right?
Yeah.
Where it is slightly different, because the emails are, you know, constant emails like for collaborations and different things like that. And asking for things from Female Fusion.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times that's where I'm like, you can talk to this person or that person. Don't talk to me.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Emails. I don't like them, but they are great for marketing.
Yeah.
You also as well have you have your other business where you are doing a lot of work helping women with public speaking.
Yeah.
And you have a group that meets a couple of times a month. Tell me a bit about that and what you do.
Yeah. So She Says So is our women speakers group. I love the name because it's kind of got a bit of attitude in it. You know, it's kind of like, because you say so.
Yeah.
And really the whole focus of it is about having women be able to express themselves really well. And this links back to business. They're not all business owners by any stretch. Some people join because they want to go up the corporate ladder and they want to be seen at work. Some people join because they want to give their wedding speech. I mean, we've had wedding speeches, we've had tears, we've had amazing things. So there's a lot of different reasons why people join. Part of what lights me up about it is that people come in and they occur a certain way. You know, they have a bit of nervousness about them. And sometimes they try and persuade me that they're definitely nervous, that it's always been this way, and that it kind of probably is always going to be this way. And that you can tell when a person is really fixed in their view.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, I always this, and I definitely that, and it's so much like this. And it's got, you know,
like that really fixed mindset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That. So part of what we do is to kind of unpick that a bit. Mm. We actually have language in the group that unpicks it, where when we hear someone going, oh, it's always this way, and, you know, I'll say, well, hey, what do we say about that? And people will say, that used to be a problem for you.
Yeah.
And even just that.
Love that.
Tilts the world a little bit, you know. Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe, yeah, that can be put safely in the past. So we have this beautiful, very close-knit group, handful of people. It's really intimate.
And is it a program? Is it something that people have to sign up for a certain amount of time?
It's a rolling program. So you can start when you like and you can finish when you like. So there's no obligation or commitment. You pay a joining fee up front, mm-hmm. which is the commitment fee. It's kind of like, if I'm going to pay this money, I probably need to stay enough months for it to be worthwhile.
Yes.
I need to stay the course. And we have a manual, which is a 10-part speaking adventure.
I love that.
It's all in the language of making it exciting.
Yeah.
It's about having people not resist stuff that they could really enjoy. And what I love about it is how people change in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in COVID, it was the thing that I really missed.
Did you do it online?
We did. We suspended everyone's payments and nobody, you know, had to kind of, you know, watch their budget or anything. And we just met for friendship and to make sure people were okay and that kind of thing. We just chatted. You know, nice. We didn't really do a lot of work. We just hung out. So, but it was, yeah, it was nice. But it was the thing that I really missed.
Oh. But it's so great to be able to give people that tool because it is one of the best tools that you can have to be confident to stand up in front of a room of people and to be able to speak.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about, you know, if you're an engineer, but if you're the engineer who can speak and be articulate, you're the one who gets the business and the same in any sector,
totally.
Really. So.
And one of the things we push our members on as well is doing an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
You know, like you need to be able to stand up in front of a room in under 60 seconds, go and tell us about your business.
Yeah.
And I've actually started to be really ruthless now. And I stand there with my phone and I'll turn the chimes on really loud. And it's like, you've got 60 seconds.
Yeah.
If you don't get it done after 60 seconds, sorry, you're done. And I feel really horrible doing that. But the thing is that you need to be able to explain your business in under 60 seconds.
Tough love, Jen. You've got to do it.
It is. Well, as I say, it's done with love, but, you know.
But hurry it along.
Hurry it along. You know, but you also have to think about it. Nobody else wants to hear anything longer than a minute.
No.
It's helping you and your business because you need to be able to tell people what you do.
Yeah, especially these days where our attention spans are reduced. All the more, you know, like, come on, come on.
I know, I'm like, bring it along. 30 seconds.
Skip to the end.
Let's go. It's so funny how that happens, hey, but I find as well my attention span, and I'm even thinking about that, even with content that we have in Female Fusion in the member portal, that a lot of our master classes are between 60 to 90 minutes long. And one of the things that I really want to do is to create something different, which is almost snackable content, where it's like, tell me how to do something in 3 minutes or less.
Yeah.
You know, something key in business, 3 minutes or less.
Yeah.
That's what I have time for.
Yeah. I love that. I'm seriously on a low information diet.
Yeah.
I really, you know, people go, oh, you know, I'm sending you this, or I thought of you and saw that. I go, oh, that's lovely. I'm not going to watch that.
It's really funny how that happens. I've really gone like that as well. And maybe it's just because it's information overload.
Yeah.
That I just feel like my attention span is not there.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to save it for the good stuff. Your attention span is, you know, for your kids or for your, you know, art project or for your travels or for your, you know.
Yeah.
You need some left over.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been an entrepreneur for close to 3 decades as well.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to yourself if you were starting over?
Oh, so much.
I know, right?
I think it has taken me 3 decades to really be willing to say, this is what I want to do and this is not for me. I think I grew up being quite, you know, the kind of good girl. I was kind of that.
Yeah.
I was kind of good in school and do the right thing. And I think a lot of my early life, I was very appropriate. You know,
okay. And you said yes to everything.
Yeah, it's just sure. And I did the things that I thought my parents wanted me to do. I finally kind of bucked the trend a bit. They kind of wanted me to do law, and I ended up doing media studies. Like, what?
I went into PR as well, and my parents were like, what?
Is that a job?
Is that a job? What does that do? Well, first was the degree in politics, and then the job in PR, and my parents were like, why can't you work for an oil and gas company? Why don't you do something else? I'm like, no, that's boring.
Yeah. Well, my family's full of doctors, lawyers and dentists. So you were expected to be a something.
Okay.
And I was just kind of experimenting a bit. But yeah, so I broke away a little bit, but still in the early years, there was a lot of doing what was expected of you. And I think if I had my time again, I would be a little crazier. You know, nothing terrible happens when you just be a bit braver.
Yeah. And what sort of stuff would you be braver on?
Oh, that is a great question. I think I would just say no to more stuff. Like, I've said yes to a lot of things. And I've discovered in my work about what trips people up in business and why they have no capacity and where all the friction is and why they're exhausted. There is just too much.
Yeah.
You cannot do it all. You're never going to do it all. There is way more opportunity than there is time.
Mm.
And so you should be excruciatingly selective.
But it's hard sometimes for people to see that, right? And it's really interesting. So I'm in a mastermind with a number of women who have 7- and 8-figure businesses. And the ones who have the really big businesses are like, you just do less.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
It's almost counterintuitive, right? That their view is like, I do less. I double down on what I'm really good at.
Yeah.
And I chill.
Yeah.
And I have that brain space to be creative.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of entrepreneurs fall into the trap of, what can I create next?
Yeah.
How can I create that? Yeah. How can I sell that? Rather than saying, how can I focus on what I'm already doing and make it better?
Yeah.
And chill.
And the thing is, for a lot of entrepreneurs, it wouldn't be fulfilling to just do one thing.
Yes.
And it's almost like having a little factory, you know?
Yes.
I mean, that's the most efficient way, is to just do one thing and keep doing it.
But a boring business is a profitable business, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That. You know, you could go buy a factory that makes paper clips and be extremely successful.
Yeah.
But you might not be excited by paper clips.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I started my TV show, it's the most ridiculous thing. And I just really wanted to do it. And it was so fun. So I guess that's what I'm talking about. Those are the things I would have probably done earlier.
So focus on the stuff that brings you joy.
Yeah.
And say no to the rubbish stuff. Like I said yes to a lot of things I didn't want to say yes to. Mm-hmm. And it was almost kind of like, well, but why would you say no? Because it's good money.
Yeah.
But what I've learned, I don't know if you found this, but when you say yes to that thing that feels a bit gross anyways, you're saying no to potentially a really great opportunity.
Totally. There's a really good book, I don't know if you've read it, called Essentialism by Greg McKeown. Go read this. It's really good. And it is about really focusing on only what is essential. Like when I, in the morning, I have a little time to have my coffee, I have my dog with me, and I write my day plan. It's a happy little part of the day. And I ask myself, what's essential now? Mm-hmm. So I don't look at my, I have an electronic to-do list. I don't look at that first. I just say, what's essential now? Because the answers bubble up. It's what's front of mind and, you know, in your heart. And you'll go, oh, I want to get to the gym. And what bubbles up are things that you really care about. You know, they're not send that report or do, you know, those sorts of things. And in that book, there's a lovely little model where he defines a little matrix to evaluate opportunities. So you have three criteria that are absolutely essential and three criteria that are optional. Mm. And it should definitely meet all the essential and it should meet two out of three of the optional. So if I'm signing a client to work with to do business consultancy, I've got some criteria. One of them is they should be really good at what they do. Be excited about it, be lit up about it, you know. And then I have some optional ones which are about parking and, you know, kind of, because
it's funny when you get older, though, it's like, I can be really picky. I don't really care.
I know. Who'd be 20 again, right?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like you can just be demanding now. Be like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So get clear on that because we often don't articulate it. We don't really know what it is that really matters. And you're absolutely right that if you say yes to one that's a bit meh, you're saying no to the one around the corner that could be amazing.
And there is, you just almost have to have faith, right? That it does come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have lived and worked all over the world. So you're originally from the UK, from Manchester, spent some time in Australia and then ended up in New Zealand, fell in love with New Zealand and were like, UK, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. As soon as I left the UK, I was never going back. Just the weather's so terrible.
Yeah.
It's just, I never had a single good hair day.
It is true. Every time I go to London, I don't have good hair.
No. Australia's great for hair. Better than New Zealand, actually. You go to Perth, it's really dry. It's good for...
Dubai's good for hair as well. We have good hair in Dubai, except for summer months when it's about 90% humidity. Yeah. Doesn't really work then.
Yeah.
But the rest of the year, it's pretty good.
Yeah. We got engaged in Dubai. So I think I had good hair that day.
Oh, okay. So it's got good hair, good temperature as well. But what have you found working across different markets?
Yeah. Well, I guess when I look back at the UK, it's so long ago that I was a kid. Like I don't think it would be possible to do in the UK the things that I've done here. Like just start your own TV show because you felt like it. Like, I cannot imagine having tried to do that in the UK. So I think New Zealand is a lot more intimate as a country and you could probably get a hold of anyone that you really wanted to. It's not hard to find people. So I think it would be hard to do really ambitious things in the UK. I don't know. I just can't really imagine it. I was 18 when I left, really. I went to uni in Northern Ireland and then I worked in London for a little bit and then I moved to Australia. That would be probably, I've been here 14 years, another five before that. It's so long ago. Yeah. I wouldn't know how to make a go of it in London, to be honest.
Okay.
You know, these days. I had my first job there and it was a startup company and we didn't have offices yet. So I was in a flat in London, pretending I was in an office, phoning people up and I'd ask for information, whatever my job was. And they'd say, oh, can you fax me? I'd be like, oh, the fax machine's broken at the moment because, you know, I'm just sitting in my front room. I don't have a fax machine. So, really my experience of England would be so outdated. We weren't even using email and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, it's really, I find it so interesting though, looking at like different markets and where there's the similarities and the difference and the culture, and even, you know, how we were talking about here in New Zealand, everybody's like super chill.
Yeah.
And chill time is important. But then other markets, it's like, go.
There's
all
a real
the time.
Work ethic in the UK. I noticed that when I moved to Perth in Western Australia, I was like, wow, this is different. And the weather really impacts how people feel.
Definitely.
So it's just summer all year round. It's beautiful. In the winter, it's like a lovely 20, 22 degrees. And all meetings are done over coffee. And there was, at that time anyway, I don't know how it is now, there was plenty of money in the economy. You know, there was a mining boom. If you wanted to run training programs, there was loads of money for it. It was like, wow, this is not like England at all.
Yeah. So I experienced that in the UAE as well. Yeah. When I initially went there for a year because I had won a big contract with the federal government. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, you need to set up your business here. And I just ended up staying because I was like, the opportunities that I get in this market and the surrounding markets is massive. Yeah. And I would never have those opportunities back in the UK.
Yeah.
So it was like, why would I go back? I've always had my business there, but chose to stay sort of in the Middle East region because there was far more opportunities. And I see that as well, actually, you know, how we were talking just about money and things like that as well, as I find that one thing that's so great as well is if you can have clients or customers in different parts of the world, that really protects you as well.
Yeah.
And I learned that the hard way, that I didn't know that in the beginning, and when I had my clients just in the UK, and then one of the first recessions hit and I was like, oh, where's it? Nobody's spending any money.
Yeah.
And then realized, you know, hey, I could like have clients in Africa, I could have clients in the Middle East, I could have clients in Asia.
Yeah.
They're not having a recession like they are in Europe.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the opportunities that you can have from going global, even if you're in one place.
Yeah, totally. And of course now, you know, you can be, you know, on Zoom all the time. You can be servicing clients anywhere that you're willing to operate in the same time zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about you? What's next on the horizon? Anything exciting coming up?
Lots exciting. Yeah. And of course, as we talked about with the essentialism focus, you really have to take one piece at a time.
Yeah.
It's so tempting to try and work to 80% at 50 different things. So I do try and work on one at a time. I'm working on a book. I'm actually not working very hard on it. I'm creating some blogs that are going to be chapters. Mm. And it's going to be about the unexpected ways that you can stop leaking profit. The intention is each chapter is going to be like 2 pages so that you can dip in and out. And you
Short attention span,
exactly that. So you can, there'll be stuff about money, obviously, but also time and energy, how to maximize those so
that
you can, you know, very often when people start doing this work, they feel better, but they're not really quite sure why. They can't quite put their finger on it. You know, one of my clients said to me one day, we'd been working together about 3 weeks, and he was like, I already feel better. And, you know, I can now sit and enjoy watching Suits on Netflix with my wife and not feel guilty. I'm like, yes, you know, because that's quality of life, right?
So
the book, as I say, I'm not actively like, I'm not going to lock myself in a cabin and try and pump it out. I'm week by week writing an article that will be a chapter.
Okay. And so do you think that that will be within the next year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that book sounds super cool. I think you'll have lots of people in Female Fusion who will want to buy that.
I might need to speed it up because the excitement for it is kind of spilling out.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like, oh, this is going to eat me. You know, do you ever get like that?
You're so
excited about something. You kind of wake up and go, oh, I shouldn't really get up yet. It's only 3 a.m. But I could pump out a chapter.
Yeah.
It's just right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so exciting. I'll definitely buy the book. Well, Kath, thank you so much for sitting down with me on the podcast today and sharing your journey as an entrepreneur. And I look forward to seeing you next time I'm back in the country as well.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Jen. It was such a blast. We could go all day, couldn't we?
We could, yes. Thanks, Kat.
Thank you.
I don't know about you, but social media can feel pretty overwhelming sometimes as a business owner. It just feels like there is constant work that always needs to be done, which is why I have recorded for you a completely free 45-minute masterclass called Marketing Without Social Media. And inside, I share with you my tools and techniques that I use to grow Female Fusion and the other businesses that I have had. So I give you the tools, the techniques, and the frameworks to put that in place in your own business. All you need to do is head over to femalefusionnetwork.com/marketing.